fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A wonderful Wednesday to you. So glad you're with me on The Cale Clark Show. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call if you want to talk to me. 1-888-914-9149. We also have, of course, Twitter accounts that you can tweet at and you can follow. My account, at Cale Clark, is my Twitter handle, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We also have a show account as well, which Karen Moran is monitoring very, very closely, at Cale Clark Show. And the email address is unchanged. We thought about changing it today, but we decided not to. Cale@relevantradio.com. Well, we're going to talk about anger today, and I think we can all relate to this. We live in a world where everybody, in a world, it's like those movie commercials or trailers, in a world where everybody seems to be angry almost all of the time. Isn't that the case? They're angry online, they're angry offline. How do we deal with this? Anger is something that we have to deal with every single day. But is anger always bad? Did Jesus even get angry at one point? And you probably know he did. And he actually got angry more than once. We're going to talk about that. How can God help us when we're angry? These are all things that we're going to talk about. So if you struggle with this, or if you have great solutions that have worked for you to control your anger, give me a call. I want to hear about it. 1-888-914-9149. Once again, is a toll-free number to call on The Cale Clark Show. Well, I did read some great articles about this by this guy named Christopher Ashe, who actually wrote a book about it called, along with another person named Steve Midgley, called The Heart of Anger. And he talks about five myths that are very, very common about anger, which I'm going to share with you that from this article by Chris Ashe. And the first myth is that anger is evil. Anger is evil. He starts off by saying, imagine if you were called upon to give a eulogy for someone and you're at the funeral home, it's your turn to say a few words, and you start off by saying, he was an angry man. We're not supposed to speak ill of the dead. I mean, sometimes we have to, right? Depends who they are. But generally, that's kind of frowned upon. But if you said, oh, he was an angry man, or you started off by saying she was a very angry woman, people would certainly raise their eyebrows, because being angry is not necessarily a compliment. If you call somebody angry or characterize them as being angry, we think about somebody who lashes out at other people, raises their voice, maybe even swings a fist. We don't know. But that's not something that people want to be associated with or called, even though people do express those qualities from time to time. There's so much anger in the world today, and there's a lot of anger in the United States. And there are a lot of thinkers both inside America and outside of America who are looking at the current cultural context, and they're asking the question, are we beginning to witness the unwinding of the United States of America? People have actually asked that question. Is America possibly in the early birth pangs of a potential another civil war? A lot of people are saying, yeah, it's showing signs of this. We do know this. I don't know if that's the case or not. And I don't want to get into it. This isn't a political talk show. I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent here. But we have to confess that there is a deep division in American society. Politically, there's just a lot of things going on. And groups, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of middle ground either for compromise. People actually tend to hate their opponents, whoever they may be. And they make very little effort to understand where they're coming from a lot of the times. Social media can just exacerbate these tribes and the hatred that's out there. And so this is around us all the time. And this is a big question. But anger itself, and that's really what I want to talk about. I don't want to talk about the political situation. I want to talk about anger. Anger itself is not intrinsically evil. So this is a myth. This is myth number one about anger, that it's always evil. It's not. It's not essentially evil. It's not of necessity evil. It's not intrinsically evil. There can be, and there is such a thing as having a righteous anger, a good anger, a necessary anger, even a holy anger. And in fact, the Bible speaks of the anger of God, if you will, the wrath of God. And This is true, by the way, both in the New Testament and in the Old Testament. There's a heresy that started in the mid-second century that has been incredibly stubborn, incredibly persistent. It exists even in our own day. And it was started by our good friend, the heretic, well, he's not our friend, actually, Marcion. Now, you might have heard of Marcion. And if you haven't, you probably even heard of his heresy if you didn't know what it was called, Marcionism. The heresy is basically this. Marcion said, you know, when I read the Old Testament, this God just seems so angry, so vengeful. This can't be the God of the New Testament. It can't be the God of Jesus Christ. So he posited that the God of the Old Testament was actually a different God. And he called this God the Demiurge. The Demiurge. Now, I want to explain what the Demiurge is. The Demiurge is not an urge to listen to the music of Demi Lovato, nor is it an urge to watch the films of Demi Moore, such as the 1992 classic, A Few Good Men. Remember that one? Here's a clip.
The objection's overruled, counsel.
Your Honor, the defense strenuously objects and requests an 802 conference so that His Honor might have an opportunity to hear discussion before ruling on this objection.
The objection of the defense has been heard and overruled.
Move to reconsider.
Your objection is noted. The witness is an expert, and the court will hear his opinion.
That's right. I strenuously object. Oh, is that how it works? You've probably seen the movie. Well, I strenuously object to the Demiurge, because there's no such thing. The God of the Old Testament is the same God in the New Testament. It's the same God. The same God. Hebrews, in the book of Hebrews, chapter 13, verse 8, it says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. God never changes. Jesus Christ is the same. God the Father is the same. The Holy Spirit is the same. There is only one God. So when we talk about the anger of God, it is a real thing, but it's different. It's different from an unrighteous anger, such as human beings exhibit from time to time, maybe a lot of the time. The anger of God is always consistent. And it's always fair. It's always right, because it's aroused purely by evil. God is mad at evil. God is angry at sin. And here's the other thing, too. When God is angry, think about this. God is morally perfect. So God's anger is based upon perfect knowledge of the situation, not only of the actions and words that are in question. Is this thing wrong? Is this thing evil? Are these words evil that this person is saying? But God can also perfectly judge not only the actions and words, but he can perfectly judge the intentions of the heart. And this is the thing that we can't do. We can't judge intentions. And Christians, Catholics get this wrong all the time. The statement of Jesus, judge not, lest you be judged. Oh, we're not allowed to judge anything. That's not true. We judge things all the time. We have courts of law. We make decisions. This is right. This is wrong. We have to parent our children. We have to make judgments on these things. What Jesus is talking about here, we can't judge someone's intentions necessarily, what they might be thinking or why they might have done this. And we can't judge somebody's eternal destiny. We don't know the eternal state of their soul before God. We don't know what their final destination is going to be. But what we can judge, what we have to judge, is the outward action, whether it's words or deeds, whether or not they're objectively wrong. We can't tell why people do the things they do all the time, but we can certainly say, yes, they are wrong. We can judge actions. So don't forget that. But when God judges, he doesn't just judge the actions or the words. He also perfectly judges the intentions, and he knows the state of the person's soul. So when he's angry, it's for a reason. It's right. And he has to be that way. He has to be that way because he loves this world and he loves people in it. And he's angry at the things that destroy people and bring ruin into their lives. And so really kind of related to this, we have to look at whether or not this question of whether or not Jesus got angry, because that gives us a great window into God the Father and God the Holy Spirit as well, because Jesus is divine. Now, in John's Gospel, in John chapter 1, it talks about the incarnation. We all know this very, very well. But in John chapter 1, it says this in verse 18, "No one has ever seen God. The only begotten Son, who is in the bosom of the Father, he has made him known." So Jesus reveals to us, by becoming incarnate, he reveals to us the Father. He reveals to us the Father that we cannot see. And that's why Jesus says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. The way that I'm acting, the way that I'm living, the things that I'm saying, this is from the Father, because I and the Father are one. So in every way, the life and death and resurrection of Jesus give us knowledge about the Father. So when Jesus is angry, he makes known to us why that the Father is angry about these things too. Jesus has a right to be angry when he's mad. It's a righteous anger. And the way he expresses it as the perfect God-man, the sinless Savior, he expresses his anger in a right way as well. And Christopher Ashe quotes this late 19th and early 20th century scholar named B.B. Warfield. And he wrote about the anger of Jesus. And so, again, he hits on this theme that to be a moral person, to be moral means you have to be disapproving of evil. So when you think about the emotions of Jesus, and the emotion of anger is not necessarily a bad thing. He says the emotions of indignation and anger belong to the very self-expression of a moral being. And by the way, it cannot be lacking in the presence of wrong. If you are truly a moral being, you can't lack anger if you see wrongdoing. You have to be angry at it, because if you don't care, there's something wrong. If you're not angry about it, and if you approve of it, there's something wrong. But God is moral, and so he has to be angry in the presence of wrongdoing. He's got to be. So Jesus's anger, as B.B. Warfield puts it, is the righteous reaction of his moral sense in the presence of evil, because he who loves men and women must hate with a burning hatred all that does wrong to human beings. That is a great quote. That's a powerful quote. So here are three examples, and maybe we could find more, but here are three examples in which the anger of Jesus does reveal the anger of God the Father and also the Holy Spirit as well, the entire Godhead, the Holy Trinity. So think about Mark chapter 3. Remember that incident where a man with a shriveled hand is in the synagogue. Now, let me just read this to you. It's a very, very quick reading. This is Mark chapter 3. And this is Jesus. He's in the synagogue. The Pharisees are watching him. It says, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there who had a withered hand. And they watched him to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said, and Jesus knows this, of course. And he said to the man who had the withered hand, come here. And he said to them, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill? But they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, and said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. So imagine this. They don't care about this guy. They don't care about the fact that he's been suffering with this. They don't care, they don't want to help him in any way. They just want to find something to accuse Jesus with. Oh, is he going to heal him on the Sabbath? So their hearts are totally in the wrong place. And then talk about strange bedfellows. The Pharisees and the Herodians, who couldn't be more different or more diametrically opposed, they cooperate in their shared desire to get rid of Jesus. Jesus is so angry about this, about their attitudes. So that's one place where Jesus was angry. Maybe that's not the one that came to mind, first of all, for you. But, wow. The second one here, now this is probably the one that came to your head, into your mind, first of all. In John chapter 2, when Jesus cleanses the temple, that famous quote-unquote cleansing of the temple. And we can look at this as well. Here's what happened in John chapter 2. It says this, the Passover of the Jews, verse 13, the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple, he found those who were selling oxen and sheep and pigeons, and the money changers at their business. And making a whip of cords, he drove them all with the sheep and oxen out of the temple. And he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. And he told those who sold the pigeons, take these things away. You shall not make my Father's house a house of trade. His disciples remembered that it was written, zeal for your house will consume me. They then said to him, what sign have you to show us for doing this? Jesus answered them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. The Jews then said, it has taken 46 years to build this temple, and will you raise it up in 3 days? But he spoke of the temple of his body. When therefore he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had spoken. So we all know this account. And in the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, there's a cleansing of the temple at the end of Jesus' ministry. And that's really one of the things that seals his fate going to the cross. And so really what the problem is here, why is he angry, by the way? A lot of people totally miss the point on this. Where is it? People do have to, if they're coming into Jerusalem for the feast, they have to make these animal sacrifices. They got to get their money exchanged. That is all legitimate. What these guys were doing, though, they were gouging people on the exchange rate. They were totally ripping them off. And they, of course, they had to buy these animals in the temple courts, and they were being sold for exorbitant prices. And to top it all off, and I think this is really the thing that pushed Jesus over the edge, this was taking place in the court of the Gentiles. In other words, this is where people were supposed to be coming to pray. How can they pray? There's all these animals running around, animal droppings, not exactly a conducive atmosphere for prayer. It's where this was taking place, as well as the money gouging that really ticked Jesus off. And so he's mad about this because he's defending the honor of his father. His father's honor is being impugned here, and Jesus will not stand for it. So this is very, and by the way, God the Father gets mad when Jesus is disrespected and dishonored. Think about the earthquakes, the darkness at the hour of the crucifixion. This is God the Father's displeasure at what people are doing to his son. And so Jesus is angry at the hardness of the hearts of people. He's also angry when God is dishonored. And he's also angered in the face of death, especially the death, and he loves all people, but the death of his friend Lazarus is where we see this anger coming through. And we're used to hearing about the fact that Jesus wept when he saw that Lazarus had died, but it's not just weeping. It's not just sadness. He was also angry. And we're going to talk about that after the break. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. Be right back.
Faith and how you can live it and share it too. It's the Cale Clark Show. Have a question? Give Cale a call at 888-914-9149.
Producer Lucas is in a very playful mood today. He's in a very ironic mood today. We're talking about anger. So, of course, he plays a song about called I'm Gonna Make You Happy. All right, so hey, we have to be happy no matter what. Even, you know, lose our anger, choose joy. But, you know, there is a time to be angry. There's a time for everything under heaven, as Ecclesiastes says. We're talking about anger. There can be, anger's an emotion, and it's part of how God made us. There's a righteous anger and an unrighteous anger. We're talking about the righteous anger of Jesus in the Bible. We have a couple of examples of when Jesus was angry. Here's one that you might not have thought of. In John chapter 11, and that's that famous account of the raising of Lazarus. It's not I hate when people call it the resurrection of Lazarus. It's not a resurrection. He brought him back from the dead, but it wasn't a resurrection because he was going to die again. When you're resurrected, you never die again. Jesus was the first to be resurrected in human history. He shall never die again. One day Lazarus will be resurrected as well, but it wasn't that time. But he was brought back to life, so there is a difference. I know you might say that's me being nitpicky, but no. Let's be theologically accurate here. But obviously, he was very close to Lazarus and his sisters, Mary and Martha, who lived in Bethany. And so when Jesus comes to Lazarus's grave, it's very interesting. And the English translations of the Bible don't really pick this up. It does tell us, of course, that Jesus wept. We do know this. But there's another place where it says he is deeply moved in his spirit. Sometimes it's translated as that. In some translations, it says he was greatly disturbed. Greatly disturbed. And I remember this really well because when I was in grad school, I wrote a paper on this. I did a class on the Gospel of John, and I wrote a paper on the raising of Lazarus. And it's some commentators say you could really translate this phrase in the original Greek, Jesus snorted with anger. It's very odd. It's almost like a raging bull, you know, with apologies to Robert De Niro. And what's going on here? What is he upset? Is he crying? Is he angry? I think it's a little bit of both. He's got grief for the death of his friend, but he's also angry. He's angry and he's in some sense filled with rage. Why? Because this isn't the way it's supposed to be. He knows better than anyone as God incarnate that sin, death, the grave is not what God intended for his people. And we really see the way God feels about all this. So really he's reflecting the anger of the Father. And anyways, that's just really what that means, that expression where he's deeply moved. He hates death. He hates sin that brings death into the world. And by the way, you feel this way too from time to time. Don't think this is just a strange occurrence, because imagine if you've heard of the death of someone close to you, maybe it's an untimely death. Maybe it's a needless death. Someone has been killed in an act of violence or for some needless, seemingly senseless reason. Does that not bring about not only tears, but anger and rage at times? So this is why Jesus is mad as well. And really who he's mad at ultimately, he's mad at the one who stands behind all of this, the devil. And 1 John chapter 3, verse 8 says that Jesus Christ came into the world to destroy the works of the devil. And one of those things is death, sin and death. So he defeated him ultimately on the cross. He's a vanquished foe, and that's one of the things that he's angry about. He defeated death by his own death on the cross. So see the heart of Jesus there. That's really, really important. So that's another example of a righteous anger of Jesus. So now that's Jesus, of course. So when we're angry, we do have to understand that our motives are usually not pure. They're mixed with our own sin, sometimes our own selfishness. And so our anger is always a distorted reflection of a righteous anger, which we do see in Jesus. But we see it in other people too in the scriptures. John the Baptist, he was another guy who got pretty mad. I remember that with the... He's baptizing people. Yeah, Karen. Hey, Karen.
I'm jumping in.
Dive in.
I was just thinking, you know, of a couple of things that sort of ran through my mind. You know, we're made in the image of God. Do you think that it could be possible that we see Jesus being angry because we can relate, and or it helps us relate to him better, even though it's, you know, it's not good to be angry. It's a human attribute. Psychology says anger covers up hurt. Does it seem logical that Jesus was angry because he was so hurt? And well, I mean, anger gets attention, you know? It really creates that attention, you know?
But, well, I think Jesus was angry because he was hurt at sin, at these sinful attitudes of people. And obviously, he's most angry at Satan. For tricking us into the human race, that is, into sin and taking the way of death.
And we can be angry at that too, right? I mean, we can be angry at that, but then we have to cultivate virtues that we're not just angry people, you know, overcome that, you know. But it's hard.
Absolutely. And so I think that's why it's important. I think let's go back to, I got to do this, by the way, too. Just one last thing. Yes. John the Baptist, I just wanted to mention this because he was another guy who got pretty angry. And of course, he's pretty saintly. Jesus says there's nobody greater born of woman than John the Baptist. And we know in one place we can see this is in Matthew's gospel, in Matthew, chapter 7 here. Not chapter 7. That's way too early. This is back in chapter 3. Of course, it's not chapter 7. Remember when all these people, or even some of the Pharisees and Sadducees, came to get baptized by John? And he said to them, "You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the wrath to come?" And so he was just livid at these guys. And he said, "Bear fruit that befits repentance." In other words, change your lives around. And that's really what this is all about. Anyways, I just wanted to do that John the Baptist voice. So
that's good.
Yeah, I like that, eh? You can do that on the radio. Voices, you know, radio drama. Anyways. But I think Karen, let's go through some of these other myths about anger that people have, because they're really, really important to talk about as well. So here's myth number two. So this myth number one, and that was a really long answer to that question, that anger is the myth that anger is always evil. It's not always the case. There is a righteous anger, which is exhibited, of course, by God. And sometimes we can share in that righteous anger too. For example, a child is being abused. We can be righteously angry about that, and we should be, because again, morality is always angry in the face of sin. So myth number two, and this is back to common misconceptions that people have, that anger is harmless as long as I don't act on it. So somebody might say, if I feel angry, as long as I don't lash out at people in action, don't take a swing at somebody or don't say anything angry to somebody, surely there's no harm done. Well, not quite. We have to be really careful. Again, the teaching of Jesus comes into play here. In the Sermon on the Mount, remember when he says, "Hey, you've heard it said, do not murder. But I say to you, whoever's angry with his brother is in danger of the fires of hell." Because anger can lead to murder. And usually you're angry at somebody before you kill them. You don't just kill them for no reason, although I'm sure that does happen from time to time. But murder is worse, of course, than being angry at somebody, than wishing that they were dead, because in one case, they actually do end up dead. So the outcome does matter, but there is a link here. There is a link. And he says the same thing about other sins as well. Lust and adultery. You've heard it said, do not commit adultery. It's one of the Ten Commandments. But I tell you, whoever's looked at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So what's going on here? And there's really, by the way, Jesus is not negating the Ten Commandments in any way. He's actually, in a sense, raising the bar, because the Ten Commandments deal with outward actions. Don't do this, don't murder, don't kill, don't commit adultery. But in the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus brings this new law on a different mountain than Moses had, the Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments, he talks about the inner dispositions of the heart. And I always use the example of a peanut. There's the outer shell and there's the inner nut. And some of us are, Karen, an inner nut inside. There's no doubt about it. We are nuts from time to time, but it's one unified peanut. So it's the heart plus it's the outward action that is really, really important. They're both important. So an angry heart, you say, well, I'm just angry, but I'm not lashing out. It's never just an angry heart, because it is going to overflow into actual words and deeds at some point. Just like having a lustful heart, you're going to act on that somehow, or a greedy heart. You're going to be avaricious somehow in life. Jesus says that everything springs from the heart. You've got to watch your heart closely. In Mark chapter 7, he talks about, remember he was talking about food. It's not what goes into a person that defiles them, because it just goes into the stomach and then out into the sewer. But it's what comes out of the heart that defiles a person. Evil thoughts, lust, greed, all of that stuff. That is what defiles a person. And he talks about that in Mark chapter 7. So to say that sin doesn't matter if it's just eternal, that's a big mistake. That's a big mistake. So anyway, so here's myth number three, that anger is utterly irrational. That it's always irrational. Sometimes, people can blow up like a volcano. But here's what St. Augustine said about this. And St. Augustine had great insight into the human condition. That's why people love him so much, because he's so real about the human heart. He went through a sinful lifestyle himself, of course. And he said this about anger. He said, "We do not so much ask whether someone is angry as why he is angry." Why is he angry? So when you ask that question, what do you discover? Well, most of the time when you ask people why they're angry, if they're being real, it's because they feel threatened. Something that's dear to them is being threatened or perhaps has been taken away. Because often our anger, and this is what Christopher Ashe says, our anger reveals what we treasure. Now, it might be your reputation. It might be having control over your little kingdom. And he gives the example of King Saul. because Saul got really angry when the people were praising David. Saul was still the king. And in 1 Samuel chapter 18, the people are singing and they're dancing and they're saying, Saul has slain his thousands, but David has slain his tens of thousands. Wow. He's like, what? Hang on here. I'm the king. Oh, forget this David guy. King Herod, right? When he hears about this other king of the Jews, Herod called himself the king of the Jews. In Matthew chapter 2, he hears about the birth of Christ. Where is this other guy? I got to kill him because he's a rival to my throne. So whatever the reason is, there's a reason why people are angry, and that's what's going on here. So first, the threat is perceived. Secondly, the person decides, I don't like this threat. And then step three is, I'm angry about this. So it doesn't come out of nowhere. There's a reason why, and this is what we have to figure out with people. So that's it. It's not utterly irrational. There's a reason for it. Some people might seem irrational, but there's something driving it when they get angry. We got to figure out what that is in order to help them. So myth number four, there's five myths about anger. Myth number four is that anger is a personal and an individual thing. Not always. It can be a group thing too. And I mentioned off the top that we're living in this cultural moment of anger and deep division in American society. And we know this. We see it in the Bible too. The crowd decides to go after Jesus in Luke chapter 4. He's preaching in his hometown synagogue at Nazareth. They don't like what he's saying, and they try to throw him off a cliff. Ah, a riot ensues. Paul's preaching in Ephesus started a riot in the theater. A massive crowd started a riot. So this can happen. It can happen online too, right? The internet mobs can come after people. Cancel culture. So it can be a group thing. And sometimes, especially online, people tend to hang out in these group chats and these Facebook groups and things like that. And it can be a bit of an echo chamber. They don't actually, some people do, but some people do not try to understand the point of view of the other person that they're disagreeing with. And they don't really get it, what they're saying exactly. It's not everybody, of course. Some people do make the effort. But very often, if you're only talking to people who are angry at the same things that you are, it can just be this boiling cauldron. And we can get in this mode of just everybody else is my enemy. And so anger can be a group thing too. That's the point of it. That's the point of it. And so the last point is myth number five about anger is that anger is incurable. You can't do anything about it. And there are some people that just walk around saying, I'm angry, and that's just the way I am. It's my genes. It's genetics. It's my upbringing. It's the way I've been brought up, and I here I am. It's just the way I am. I can't change. Not true. It might not be easy, but God can help you. The grace of God, anybody can change. Think about Saul of Tarsus. He was pretty violent. He was pretty angry, especially going after the Christians who believed that Jesus was the Messiah. And of course, he didn't believe that at the beginning. He was there, an accomplice to murder in the death of Stephen, the first Christian martyr. The movie Paul, Apostle of Christ, gives a great dramatic interpretation of just how hardcore this guy was in his anger and how violent he was before Jesus met him. And he changed. He was deeply changed. And so this can happen. I think about John the Apostle, James and John. They were called the Sons of Thunder. Not just because, you know, maybe they had gas, I don't know, but it was because of their anger. Lord, should we call down lightning from heaven and thunder against these people that are rejecting you? No, guys, come on, that's crazy. So John becomes known as the Apostle of Love. You know, when you read his letters, he's always talking about love. Little children, love one another, love one another, love one another. He was changed by Christ. That doesn't mean that he was saccharine sweet and didn't stand for truth, but I think his heart was softened a little bit. So it can happen. It can happen. We can change. It's not going to be easy. And Christopher Ashe, in his article, he says that progressively changing and becoming more like Christ and getting rid of our faults, it's not easy. He calls it, it's like a ground war. It's a ground war. It's hand-to-hand combat. It's like Saving Private Ryan, hard fighting. You win the battle yard by yard, inch by inch. It's not an air war where you can just drop a bomb and be done with it. It's full of pain. It's full of struggle. There's going to be setbacks. You're going to move forward. You're going to retreat a little bit. But God will be faithful. And eventually, we will be formed into the image of a son if we keep fighting and don't give up. God will do his work in us. He really, really will. So lots to think about there. And if you have a question, a comment, if you are struggling with anger, if you found a way that you can overcome it in the Catholic life, call this number, 1-888-914-9149. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to teach you and tell you how you can pray when you are tempted by anger. If you're struggling with this, what do you do about it? We're going to give you some concrete steps how you can overcome this. When we come back, it's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call for the Cale Clark Show. You can also tweet at me at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, email cale@relevantradio.com. We're talking about anger today. We just talked about five myths about anger. But now I really want to deal with this question of how you can pray when you're tempted by anger, maybe an unrighteous anger. How can you deal with that? And what's that, Producer Lucas? What you want? Do you want to ask a question? You can hop on the air. You can. You don't have to whisper in my ear. You can actually hop on if you want.
Okay, so I have a question for you, Cale.
Sure. Yeah, no problem.
So earlier when you were talking about instances throughout the Gospels when Jesus had a righteous anger, one of the instances that came to my mind, which has always been kind of confusing to me, was when he cursed the fig tree.
Yeah.
It always just seems like a mysterious event. Like, why did he do that? Why did that happen? Like, was he just having a bad day? And so I didn't know if you had any maybe insights on why that was.
Yeah. Why did he hurt the poor tree? The tree never did anything to anybody. Yeah, why did he curse the fig tree? And it's funny, too, because when you look at the text, I think it's in Mark's gospel when it says it wasn't even the season for figs, so it doesn't seem fair that he cursed the tree. He's looking for fruit and he doesn't find it. But really what's going on there, Lucas, is he curses the fig tree, and this is sandwiched around his action in the temple, the cleansing of the temple, quote unquote, in Mark's gospel. And really what he's doing, and then he pronounces basically woe on the temple establishment, the temple leadership, who are totally corrupt. They're completely corrupt. And so really what's going on there is the cursing of the fig tree is that miracle of the cursing of the tree is a parable, if you will. The tree, they come back the next day, the tree is totally withered. It's miraculous how that happened. And really that's a parable for the fact that the temple establishment has been unfruitful. It's been unfruitful. It hasn't brought about the fruit of the kingdom. And so this is a metaphor that God is removing these guys from leadership. And that's now going to transfer over to the church. And so...
Wow.
And also, the fact that it wasn't the season for figs, that yet he still expected to find some there, I think that's a sign also that God expects fruitfulness of us in season and out of season in the spiritual life. That's a bit of a spiritual reading of the passage, but I think I'd throw that in there too.
That's really interesting. I never would have thought of that. And it makes sense because it immediately precedes the going into the temple and cleansing the temple. And so it's kind of like a foreshadowing or like a indictment on the religious establishment of the day. And thank you for sharing that, because I just always read that passage and I'm just like, it just seems kind of like it's, but of course it's in the gospel, so there's some kind of meaning there.
Yeah,
but
absolutely. And a lot of scholars have written about the miracles of Jesus being parables in a sense of them. They tell a story too about who Jesus is, and that's why in John's gospel the miracles are called signs, because they point to something. Jesus heals a man born blind. He is the light of the world. We can only see clearly spiritually if we get online with Jesus. That's another example. So, this is just all over the Gospels. So thanks for asking that, Lucas. I appreciate that. It's a good question. I'm sure that's on the minds of a lot of people. That was another time that we didn't talk about that Jesus got angry, if you will, it's recorded in the Gospel. And so let's talk now just for a minute about how we can pray when we are angry. What can we do about this? How can we deal with this in a constructive manner? Because we all deal with it, especially in these times. So much anger, division over everything from COVID and how to deal with it to the political situation to there's so many things to be angry about. And so the first thing to do is always we've got to turn to God in prayer. And Christopher Ashe talks about this. And he actually says, first of all, probably the best thing to do is talk to someone if you can. Talk to God, yes, but also it's good to, God also speaks to us through other people. So if you have a trusted pastor, a confessor, a spiritual director, or even a friend that you can talk to who cares, that helps too. But the first thing to do in terms of praying about it, now this might seem counterintuitive, but when you're angry about something, especially something else someone has done, pray to ask God to show you, to convict you of your own sin. Hang on here. That's not going to make me feel better. What about the other guy and what he did? Well, here's the deal. Forget your grievance for a second. This is exactly what Jesus does. It's what he, in a sense, recommends. In Matthew chapter 18, he tells that story, that parable about the guy who gets forgiven this massive debt. He owes, let's say, $10 million. He's thrown in prison. He can't pay. His kids and wife are going to be thrown into slavery to pay the debt. And he's please, please, he pleads to the king, please give me another chance. Please forgive the debt. And the king agrees to let him go and forgive the debt. It's an incredible act of grace. And what does he do? This guy goes home. He finds one of his buddies who owes him 10 bucks. He wants to strangle the guy. Throw this guy in prison until you pay me back. The king finds out about this. Oh, I forgave you this massive debt, and this is how you treat somebody else? Ooh, back in prison you go. You're not going to get out until you pay the last penny. So this is the idea that we've got to forgive in order to be forgiven. And so this is the deal. This is what Jesus does. We need to meditate a little bit about the astronomical debt that we owe to God in terms of our own sin, and that is going to help us to forgive others who may have offended us and help us to address the anger of bitterness that can well up within us and can eat us alive. And so when we don't forgive, very often, and some things are definitely hard to forgive, we can only forgive with God's help. And it doesn't mean that we're going to have warm and fuzzy feelings towards the person who has offended us. They may not even be repentant of their sin in any way, but we will be eaten alive if we don't forgive. And so that's what God can help us to do. We need to ask the Holy Spirit to help us to do that. We're going to go to the phones right now. We've got a couple calls here. We're going to go to Matt calling from Waukesha, Wisconsin. Matt, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Cale. Thanks for accepting my call.
You got it.
I just wanted to share how I've overcome anger throughout my life. Mainly because of childhood abuse.
Mm.
So I've had anger over periods of my life because of a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And the way I've dealt with that is to basically, like one of your guests has said, what's behind anger is hurt. So basically it's embracing suffering. It's embracing your hurt and having humility, being able to lower yourself, but at the same time, uniting yourself, your suffering, to that of Christ, and embracing that hurt and dealing with that. And not letting your pride get in the way, and also basically, how can I say it? You're just gonna let go of that, and that's what's gonna lead you to forgiveness, because mm-hmm. when you come to a point where, as Jesus has said, pray for those who persecute you. When you can actually pray for somebody and wish them to recover from their own trauma, whatever it caused mm-hmm. them to do the things that they did to you, if you can pray for them, that goes a long way to showing that you're able to forgive and let go of your anger and deal with the trauma that was caused, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, Matt. And thank you for sharing. That's very powerful and very personal, and you've dealt with this. And I think we can only do this with the power and strength of Christ, to be able to do what he did, to forgive the people that were killing him. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. That is a supernatural act that we can't do on our own strength. There's no way. And so obviously you talked about some very terrible things that have happened in your life, and the more terrible the wrong, the more deeper the resentment can dig into your soul. And so this is another thing too, that we need to, and this can maybe help us a little bit too, is that we don't have the right to take vengeance into our own hands. And sometimes we get so angry at these injustices, and they're very, very real. One of the things that St. Paul says in the letter to the Romans in chapter 12, he says, beloved, never avenge yourselves. Never avenge yourselves. Give room for the wrath of God. Now, it doesn't mean that we are, yeah, God, destroy them. And we do see this attitude sometimes. It's a very human attitude, especially when we read the Psalms. There's some Psalms where, you know, David is saying, break the teeth in their mouth, O Lord. You know? But, I mean, the ultimate goal is to get to a point where we can be like Christ and praying for the forgiveness of our tormentors, praying for their conversion. That would be the ultimate. But we do have to understand that God is angry with injustice and evil, and he is going to do something about it. So we can't take that into our own hands, and God is going to act, and he will bring about justice. And so, but yeah, that's incredibly supernatural. Yeah. And that's incredibly supernatural.
Our reward is in heaven. We're not going to get back or get vengeance or get any kind of fulfillment from retaliating. Our reward will come in heaven. So it's, I mean, yes, you have to let go of that. I mean, and because it really is so counterproductive in so many ways. Like it can infest your life in so many ways. It, you know, eats you from the inside out. So it has to be forgiven. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great phone call, Matt. So thank you very much for calling in and sharing that with us. I really appreciate that. That was Matt calling from Wisconsin. Yeah, I appreciate the listen and thanks for calling in. Yeah, and that is something that we need God's grace and help to do, because again, we can't do this just out of pure human strength and forcing ourselves to do it. We need God's grace, and we also have to pray. One other thing I wanted to say is that we've got to pray that, you know, in terms of our anger, and we will, again, it is an emotion that we have, we've got to pray that the Holy Spirit makes us angry about the right things. And the problem of a lot of people is that we are angry when our own things are damaged, our own reputation, our own comfort, our own control, our own projects. But what we need to be really angry about, and this is what Jesus was angry about, is when we need to be angry about sin. We need to be angry about the effects of sin on people. We need to be angry about when the honor of God is under fire. For example, when Paul is in Athens, he is deeply grieved in his spirit when he sees all the idols that are in that city. These are drawing people that God loves away from him. And this is something that just burns in his heart, and he's just dying to preach them the gospel, and he does. So we need to be a lot more concerned about the things that anger God and try to get rid of these things, try to create a remedy for these things. And we need our hearts to be broken by the things that break the heart of God as well. And so the closer and more deeply we can identify with Christ, the more that'll be true in our own lives. Well, this is obviously a pretty deep topic, a pretty intense topic, and it's hard to do that justice in just a few minutes, but we tried to bring it up, and I hope that you've gotten something out of this show that can help you in your spiritual life. This is Cale Clark. Thank you for joining me on the show today. Lucas Holt produced. Thank you, Lucas, for your great job as always. Karen Moran, work social media, and Patrick Alog screened the calls. He's that friendly voice on the other end of the phone. We'll be back tomorrow. Can't wait to join you then. Timmery's up next, so make sure you stay tuned. And don't forget, if you missed part of the show and you want to hear the rest of what we talked about, you can always go to relevantradio.com, the Relevant Radio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're all over the place. So great to be with you. God bless you. Catch you in the next one.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.